And now I'm very happy to introduce Cheryl, whose chapbooks include Dead-Eyed Spring and This Paper Lantern. Her poems, translations, and poetry reviews appear in Cake Train, The Drunken Boat, Jubilant, Tarpaulin Sky, Third Coast, Two Lines, Interim, Diaphragm, and many others, and an anthology, Connecting Lines, New Poetry from Mexico. She's assistant professor of liberal arts at Mass Art, where she founded the Creative Writing Minor, and poetry editor to Jaius. I'm glad Don didn't correct me. She lives in Jamaica Plain with her family. So, Cheryl, please.
Thank you so much for coming, and thank you, Henry Farini, for building this place of the Gloucester Writers Center in Vincent Farini's honor. And it's really wonderful to be here, and I always have had a thing for Gloucester, and I'm already looking at the huge collected poems of Charles Olson that when I was in graduate school, I came back because I was living in Boston but going to graduate school in the Midwest, and I mailed myself a huge box of books that, of course, that I was going to read, you know, over the summer, and it was destroyed in the post office, and I lost this, like, some of my precious books. So I went to the Boston Public Library and just picked up Olson's Collected, and that was what I read the entire summer. And at some point, I was looking at Robert Creeley, sort of selected of Olson's work, and I was sort of comparing it to some of my favorites. And I was like, interesting, a lot of my favorites aren't in his selected. So I haven't yet sort of gone through the thinking of what was going on there, but it's like maybe on my to-do list for the summer. So thank you so much. So I'm going to read a few poems from this chapbook called This Paper Lantern. A lot of these feel like they really go back in time a lot. And these poems that I'm going to read is the wide range of decades, it feels. This is called Speak the Dead. I am going, have gone, lip on any travesty that will carry me, and in stride I watch people meeting or spitting open. I grow daylight in a rock, known only as day, go gossamer, go unknown into a child I made, whose paper flowers rustle at night. I am not all that outgoing. I sucked up the well, though they'll go more or less mealy and alone. Amsterdam, New York. I am not from there, but I spent 1 year there. And I have several poems that came out of that year. This one is one. Amsterdam, New York. By the looks of broken windows, you thought the building by the bridge an abandoned mill, until a woman said she worked there. Driving past one night, you saw the lights glow nothing but windows. You wanted to go inside and see her. At the least, see a profile, a machine, a shadow, the truth of her that cannot be a drunk you. This is a place. Who cares about places? This is a place to sit. A booth in a gas station shuffled among people, or just head up north and hit the Appalachians to ask what have they done and whether the curse on the Mohawk Valley stands true and you're in it. Dear rear view mirror, is anything behind me? Just a saturated black sheet, and you ask objects for a response because they don't care about God, and you consider them more. 1934 to 1980 is the title. And your parents? I always hear it. One is in the earth, I don't say his name. In my inside voice, I say, I am some mother to his death that sprouts to no end. In his funeral register, you can find my practiced name, the biggest sprawl of all the names, overgrowing their faint lines like an open casket does its day. Blush, so not bluish. The lifespan parenthetical, it takes someone else to fill it in. Written, erased again. So I'm reading sort of in the middle of this chapbook, which I never do. I usually sort of read in the beginning or the end. I always like to have a new experience of the book. So this one's called Pretend Fathers. A snoop I am for substitutes, eyeing other vigorous men who take to me or just take me in to tour the public sphere. Ah, there's the rub. My father was Picasso then. Unearthed from book reports, lucky this way, drawing on what I could, a man to miss along with millions, commemorating across the continents, loads of artwork to sort, people all dropping his name, entering his museum, the less and less famous will do. Ordinary, sensitive maybe, a secret multiplying assembly of fathers, artists, a teacher or two, growing into a composite I feed letters to, welcoming jewels. I make them and they give. Take it away, fathers. They lean in. What's watering you? They ask, their ears a vibrant hum and mirroring all they can. But let's be true. The biographies for kids leave out the harm an intimate man can do. I've seen them in a fury and troubled swore off their necessity. Secrets cramming the busied tunnels of other families. I thank you, though, for lending your fathers. They have sort of done the trick. And this one's called Dear Mother and... Dear Mother and Bowling Alley. The din a mix of the guttural and the toppled pins and cocktails I'd order virgin. Three cherries. Bartender in a tux. Doesn't he know where he's at? Tell me, can't we leave? It's easier to strut, to sally forth from these pride gap splints, the bone wish of them, a nightlight, a palm's shadow projected over a score sheet. See that magnified knuckle hair, how it's crossing a zero, splitting a null, no, marking a strike, the tiny pencil held or falling into the hand, each bowler a hindrance to being at home. Next polka, jitterbug, VFW dance hall tonight, makeshift bar, makeshift drunk now at home. We all have to play. So that's just a little selection from this paper lantern. And I'm going to read some others that go array of different topics. This is called Complete with Blue Flowers. Somebody that I miss. I am just about to forget the boat she arrived in from Latvia, 1950, General something. I wonder if they ever found Chopin's heart. After she knows about the internet, I hear, ask your computer, where is Chopin's heart? It's back in Poland. Good. She chose America over Australia. Too hot. Norway was only accepting the blind, and Canada just men for coal mines, women for asylums. She says displaced persons. The term this time may stick to personhood than her person. Her day shirt looks like her nightshirt, looks like a woman looking through the blinds, unloading. I love this dress with this story. This one is called Come to Mind. It's like a poem that, you know, never quite fits in any manuscript, but I keep coming back to it, you know. Come to Mind. I have learned tricks to making... Sorry, let me repeat. I have learned tricks to avoid making rich people feel uncomfortable about their money. Oh, I have one just like it. What processing power, huh? From my armchair vacation, I would bring them a tiny souvenir, a tiny come to mind. Spend 4 of these days to find out what they do not have, say a recording of vocal fillers, and like, in another language, though, well, so they love it. How they love the newest things. After a few flutes, they'll dance to it, and I'll sneak in something about the Marine Museum. Have you ever heard the origin? The word sabotage derived from the time of the French Revolution, when the workers threw their sabots, their shoes, into the machinery. True, it's not substantiated. And now for my gripe. Oh, I mean my gift. It's called After Assertiveness Training. The world needs more muffins. I make more muffins. At your behest, I may make them. With oats, with walnuts, for world leaders, but not for oafs. The calculations get tricky. I make lovers moan for my muffins. Brash, I moan for my own. Do not add frosting. Do not make them cupcakes. Dribble, you can. Some honey, if you like a little dentist dulce. Sing sweet Latin to the world in need of delectable muffins, which you supply. And watch how some leaders give in. Sprinkle warfare. Hungry, they climb into my mouth. This muffin is not your muffin. Go make your own damn muffin. No sprinkles either. Oh, let's not get hateful. You now have more muffins, I say, where the makers rule. So this next series of poems is from a larger collection called You Can Take It Out. And so over the years, I think with illness or medical situations have somehow become my muse, and it's not something that I called upon wanting to be my muse, but it has happened and I am at its service. So this one's sort of, some go from untitled to titled pieces. A name is a tense. Risk can squish a name. Curled up birch bark on the desk, the crust of dusk, why not? No apology to beauty. Big heads rotted out, time is a bigger ladle. Person welling up, and the people they were in their bodies. Perpetuity finds its length in going backwards, remembering. The mess she loves, the ones she loves, are never just speech. The house guest. Wildebeest got so close to biting my dog that her black fur has turned wholly white, the texture of a mattress floating in an estuary. I am the house guest of any dream. With salt in the windowsills, the garden breeze rushes in at zucchini and squash, I go back to the drawing board, rethinking rabbits. The mother must have escorted out the kits, burrowed underneath our time, leaving a bulge of dirt. No one asked me to leave, but a broom appears by the door. Now our dog, injured with a cut paw, crouches as far as she can beneath the seat. Pain, a state of infancy, an estuary to the open sea. Ambergris. If that's the correct way to say it, does anybody know ambergris? Ambergris?
No.
Ambergris?
That's how I've always heard it.
Less grease and more gris.
More gris? Ambergris. I like it. I knew my doubts were founded. Okay. We, ambergris. We didn't find whale vomit. Perfume was lost on us. Found the abundant dead razor bills and puffins, a thin white stripe on the black I'll trace no matter if it stops. The snowless shore only days after a blizzard. Now another we go into, a tiny human in blown snow, my eye drawn to almost any solo figure in a landscape, the boat with a line of blue, you a yellow swath, a red cup, our dog in black and white animating any scene. Then that baby whale, half eaten, its insides like wet ute rope, coming undone, puffing up, its surface looking too charred for sea. It hadn't been a dark day. The eyes, the first to go. Nest in me. The doctor says, you have a beautiful uterus. I bet you hear that from all the doctors. Nope, I say. I like her immediately and expect good aim. I give them names, Hunky and Dory, which my friend miswrites as Honky and Dory. One friend wears a red amulet, another hugs a chanting guru. Even the pragmatics say vibes and juju and tell me their dreams. Implant, my lovelies, stay, implant. If and in, soured. This yolk sack, a bunk settler. An ultrasonic blur, a spark subsidiary. I am a spore of disbelief, tongue out, tipsy on ether, gathering how and when it shores to wash away each morning a slot filled with ancillary forms, all of them I signed. Another spring. On an estrogen bender, I eat an egg salad sandwich. With all of my heart and libido springing while people slurp their big gulps on a congested bus. The driver gifts us the spaciousness of a greeting, and like a parent says, don't forget your belongings. My bag is wrapped fit around me with a number I've jotted down, a number I wasn't able to commit to memory, one I'll have to repeat multiple times. I am wicked horny looking for someone beautiful. My husband is on the way in the truck with the cryogenic tank buckled into the passenger seat. They chat IUI style, I imagine. Smile. We meet in the lobby with no gargantuan chandelier. A nurse says my name, and we roll with a whole slew of names, passing them and testing them on our abracadabra lips. My body goes on asking, will I have a roommate sooner than later? So you might be noticing a theme. I need to make another decision about you, body. Your endorphins are a charade, your symptoms a meandering poppycock, your nerves a tangle of pains. Here, now there, the onlookers ask me to explain. I name you rivulet and throw in some stones. No Argo will take hold. 911 for ambulance. I raided all the products looking for a pad, listening for sirens. The gurney was one big maxi pad. When you're not screaming, you may be at an 8. In the ER, the man beside me is getting his last foot amputated. The physicians are speaking to him in their broken Spanish, more mangled than not. And I cannot muster enough energy to yell that he deserves an interpreter. I cuss and we whisper, and my stretcher gets rolled by without my baby protest. Trying. Pink ladies' slippers face extinction. Deer munch them, and newly hatched worker bees are sparse. The ones able to push into the snug pouch where there could be nectar, then barely escape, not all, through the back of the balloon, shook up, covered in pollen, heading to another orchid until they recognize the trap. like a newcomer in town, poking my head into a brightly painted comic foreground with a hole where the head should be, to burst into mermaid, pirate, flamenco dancer, Salem witch. I know bodies are a source for another. The snapshot, my paunch, a false start, liar, liar, waiting, a pillory. You know those moments where you, like, you look at a poem and you're like, yes, I got fascinated with learning that word for the first time, and now it's in my poem, a pillory that I did not know. That...
Too much time in Salem, right?
Decapitation. Technicians. Sonnet by accident. After sex, what seems like a long haul from our bed, I slip and fall. Accident prone, the language of accidents comes pouring forth to keep it tight, side swiped, red of lights and blood. My friend consoling a woman lying in the street. What hurts? Until the ambulance arrived and she was lifted into an intersecting calm. In the kitchen, my torso is lit by the water dispenser, its appealing sheen, my body heat meeting the cool of the water glass I hold toward the light up to the lever which keeps tempo. No ice spillage, nothing askance or egregious, but this surge that has supplanted sex, the sonnet, with so much volition, so many luminaries, that I am in its light, my love. Thankfully, there'll be tomorrow. Maybe the closest I've gotten to a love poem. Come on, at the end, maybe there. What people said to me yesterday. You have some gum on your shoe, some pesto on your chin. Wow, that's a lot of shots in the butt. Your fly is open. Your uterine lining is fantastic. Thank you for babysitting. You can stay on the same dosage. Supplies for the otherworldly. I'll trade you a snail with its slick trudge for a tiny clover mite that makes a smashing red stain. Loss is a given, death a one-hitter. But finding the dead is not sloths of smoke I lap up as in a trance at dusk. I pickpocket being on the lookout for the dead, emergent and wild, the rushes wavering, careful not to cough and alarm just when I reach into the marvel. You can laugh with the dead. I just added that last line, so you'll have to tell me how that worked. I have two poems, so this one is called Two Poems Remaining. What are your metabolic needs? Again, the four quartets come up. The children are heard laughing in the foliage, out of sight, blistering with symbolism. I call them out. They peel back their eyelids to that fleshy inverted lid, hold flashlights to their chins. The act, inconsequential in the day, will be horrifying tonight. What are your metabolic needs? They repeat, sloughing off, breaking down, and yeah, transforming. Good night, Tennyson. Eliot could never put him to bed. Hanging out with vultures, I scrape my days until they scab into a life. Oops, I have speeches to rearrange for naught, advice to sprinkle until almost catatonic. Air, air, it's daylight whence I speak, where motion lights do not deter my nocturnal best, and much goes without saying, and I say it anyway in emojis. The leaves quake. Mama Cardinal has a nutritious worm in her beak. So much chirping. And this is a really new poem. And I'll end with this one. Okay. Can't believe you guys came. Thank you. It's so nice to have an audience. Do people know the dancer Pina Bausch? Pina, P Pina. So the documentary of Pina is amazing. I've watched it maybe 10 times by now.
Wow.
It's so good. I love it. Directed by Wim Wenders. Writing with Pina Bausch. The company comes to dance, getting around and through the contraries. One prop is damaged, the other fraying, and she, stumbling, with char in her hair, will not speak, and we do not expect it. A blank page, isometric. My will, still naive. My proxies, here. I heard a doctor say, immortal cells are cancerous cells. They don't stop dividing. Boulders, soil, silk, pools, cafe chairs and tables. The gray skin on my nipple will soon slough off. We can see you now. From one waiting room into another one, only for patients. Along familiar expert faces in a maze of cooperation, we can share some tricks of relief. Gruff elegance. For me, also, my earnestness meets my foolishness, and it is a mixed form. So text me if there's dancing. It is a gift to know, too, what the body drums up, and to have someone wait for you outside, awake. Thank you very much.
Wow, that was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. That was beautiful. So everybody here knows Don. Don has probably been at the Writers' Center more than any other poet.
Wow.
Yeah, he is relentless. And we love him for that. So, you know, does everybody know Don?
No.
All right, so here we go. All right. Poet, editor, translator. His recent book of poetry is Essay Poems, Don Madros, Loveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
Dos Madres.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have that lingo, man, so no. Sorry.
No, that's an easy word.
Yeah, it's true, and you help me practice that. All right.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Other books from Dos Madres include Cranberry Island series, which and a North Atlantic Wall. Cranberry Island series are amazing poems that Don wrote, sometimes about Charles Olson, which I've gone through myself. So A North Atlantic Wall, prologue pages, but was issued by Ahadada, 2009. Fields, Light and Dust, 1995. For several years, he edited Oars, a series of anthologies devoted to topics bearing on postmodern poetics. Books of poetry and translation include Emilio Prados, Enclosed Gardens, Antonio Gamonida, and
more Italian, but it's Spanish.
Gamoneda. Grazie. Description of the Lie, Talisman, 2014, and Gravestones, Uno Press, 2009. His translation of Roberto Echeverren. I got the accent wrong. Echeverren. And The Espresso Between Sleep and Wakefulness is from Cardboard House, 2016. His translation of his Virgin Mountain is from Lavender Ink, 2017. And a translation of Nestor Perlonger.
Bollinger,
Cadavers, is from Cardboard House. Recent critical work includes Albiach Ceylon. Blach Ceylon. Reading Across the Language, Annex 2017, and his expressivity in modern poetry is from Fairly Ridiculous, March 2019. Don.
Well, as if I were still a college professor, I wrote this 300-page book on expressivity in modern poetry from Ezra Pound to Lynn Hagenian, which is a long trip. So there's that. It's too expensive to think about. I can sell you a copy for $70, but really. Now this book, Cranberry Island series, which Henry mentioned, made me think I would want to read something from it. This poem has been set to music by a wonderful man, deceased. His name is William Goldberg. And Cranberry Island, sort of an inspiration from Lowell with the map on the cover, which is like the Maximus One poems. And in the middle of Cranberry Island is this huge tidal pool, which completely drains at low tide. So it was a site of industry. They could build boats on the shore and use oxen and horse to haul them out onto the mud flats, or vice versa, was a natural way to get at the boats. And although I write some very old sonic poems, this is not very old sonic at all, but it's about that pool. It's about the mud when the tide drains out of the pool. It's called Heroes and Lovers. The tide seduces the red grass. Make a plaster of mud for your wounds. Wind ravages the spruce. Contemplate the joining of the root. Calligraphy in scales, scars, where the ardent sun has dried the clay. Break the shell and free the sky. The bluest river circles the heart. I was writing like that 20 years ago, but I'm not writing like that now. I'm writing very philosophical poems now. Sometimes there's a little lyric fragment. This is my book called Essay Poems. It's a genre that's very ancient. I would consider Lucretius to have been an essay poem poet. Alexander Pope wrote an essay on man. Carla Harriman writes essay poems, as I do. So they're sort of philosophical. I'm going to read a couple of short ones. The essay poems themselves are usually 7 or 8 pages in this book, which is kind of long sometimes. And some don't have a title. The boy held an owl in his eyes. The skin over the flat bridge of his nose freckled. He had no chin. With the passage of years, identity dissolves in the flat blue light that memorizes a proud house on the high street. Memory searches for his name. Surprised at how easily it rejects so many before settling like a bird of prey on one. I wondered too about the becoming bird or animal in the life of the boy. Acrid flecks of tobacco bitter on the lower lip and the rowdy wrestling among the strong. I sat outside the ring watching the erotic display that displaced the anger that constricts the throat in the name of the father. In the loft, exposed beams provided nooks for pigeons to roost. Bird shit bred worms that infected the mattress where we lay in our love making. All around the barn now and along the fence line, a shocking display of forsythia ignites the very bowels of beauty. Joy is caught on the wing of this light. Well, that's a memory of an old love, I guess. And here's another poem from page 59 without a title. See, that poem was Name of the Father, that's reference to Lacan and something about. I wondered, too, about the becoming bird or animal. That's how everybody transforms under the rhizomatics of Gilles Deleuze. So it's really an essay poem about philosophy as well as a love lyric. What does Spinoza mean by lust? Deadly Sins Plus Ambition, Scholium, Part 3, Proposition 56. These are species of emotions. The subject is the power of the mind, and emotion is a confused idea. It dwells in the core, which swirls beyond precepts and perception. It is real but not real within language, exterior to philosophy. Emotion is real but not real within language, exterior to philosophy. Pleasure is not directly bad, but good. Part 4, Proposition 41. Joy cannot be excessive. Part 4, Proposition 42. But melancholy, lovely melancholy, dark goddess, you, like anguish, are evil and a condition of the body, not just a part as are the eyes or the vulva or the penis that suffer affliction. Do I mean addiction? Do forces outside philosophy, which is the pursuit of reason and therefore of the good, guide me, prod, nay, whip me to the embrace of pain, as if my body were a spinning top that wobbles on its axis and falls back, precession, my dark transport. I address the nonverbal you in fear of being swallowed by nameless forces. That's it. Then you have maybe a little lyrical moment mixed in with that heaviness, page 60. What string cuts like an ice string? Luminous blocks of blue ice cut from the ice shelf. On this surface, a young priest dances in seal's skin, leggings, polar bear cuffs at wrist and ankles. What fish but the Arctic salmon thrives in the waters of Kotzebue Sound, its red flesh flayed. I'd like to read a whole essay poem, but I don't know if I dare. I'm going to start one, which is on page 87. And every part of this poem is pastiche from the poetry of Lisa Robertson, who is, in my mind, the most phenomenal living female poet, and maybe poet of any race, gender, or species. She's amazing. I retitled the poem, The Generosity of the Dead. Part one, the purpose, dissemble, disassemble. One is prose, the other poetry. All commentary is sadistic. Will prayer attain the intimacy of a conversation with God, like those once imagined by John of the Cross in the transhistorical Baroque? So much depends on discipline, the disciplines. So lovely sucking theory from doubts, she wrote in Debbie, line 498. Now I occupy the design, the last words of Lisa Robertson's Rousseau's Boat, incite my interrogation of the Baroque. The generosity of the dead is our problem, she writes. When poets rhymed, our meditations followed the discipline of Ignatius Loyola. Eliot's Ash Wednesday is neo-Baroque beggary, buggery, I cried. Spiritual quest in a rationalized world, she confesses. Dominant, I wanted to wear memory like a molded hunger. In Magenta Soul Whip, page 11, her readings defy narrative clarity. Poetry disdains the talking cure. The poet constructs the many-layered fable, etude, and exercise. I'm just going to quit it there. There's seven more pages of this. Sorry. Oh. Would you like me to continue?
You have to read the book.
You'll have to read the book. They're on sale at the back table. Okay. I'm going to read from a nonfiction novella, which is a text that I've been I've been developing. And it's got some raw moments, but I just can't worry about that. I'm just going to go through them. Right. Or actually, maybe I'm not going to read what I plan to read. I'm going to read this and a story because of Cheryl's evocation of whales. I'm going to read a story about Jonah and the whale. But this is the introduction to, in a sense, to the nonfiction novella. I just read two paragraphs. On July 7th, 1982, incidentally my birthday, the building on 22 Bromfield Street was bombed, destroying the premises of Gay Community News, Fag Rag, and Glad Day Books. Gerald Moldenauer, the emissary from Toronto, visited Fletcher Street, where I lived with the other boys. The man in me did not care for his lank black hair. In a fundraiser after the bombing, the boy in me met Garrett Lansing. Michael took some photographs that were published in Fag Rag. In time, my house and barn in New Hampshire became a safe place for faggots in a time of hiding. Michael burned negatives in the metal colander I still use to strain pasta. Tom was extremely nervous, his hands clammy. Now Tom has passed. He died in Valencia, or the North Shore of Haiti. The man and me attended a wake for Charlie Shively. Charlie celebrated anarchy. A true faggot, he despised domestic bliss. The boy in me had a marginal role in the filming of Rosa von Praunheim's Army of Lovers, or Revolt of the Perverts. His assistant director and I were close. We sat in a bar with all-night jazz. His rough beard and strong tongue intimidated me. Now Garrett and Charlie are dead. In Madrid recently, the man who I am spent some time with Vicente Molina Fox. He had attended the Royal Opera production of Street Scene, lyrics by Langston Hughes, as had I. Vicente's novels feature highly emotional romances in which a boy, who is two boys folded into one, discuss their attractions and disappointments with one another. The Sour Guest is a collaboration between Vicente and Louis Cremades, who was a boy in his late teens and who rejected Vicente's overbearing, well-intentioned, but hovering love. Vicente has honed self-criticism to a fine art. Another novel of his is an epistolary interchange between two of Vicente's characters. The figure of the boy in me, who is the avatar of the man in me, and the man in me, who is a boy, has come to dominate my self-education. Now I'm going to read a more coherent narrative fragment for you. It's called Redemption. It's one of about 10 books I've now divided this novella into. It's called a nonfiction novella. It's not that coherent. It skips all over the place. I can't explain anything I'm going to read. He was told to go down to the shore and construct a bark for his master's rite, an altar on which rum and candles might be lit, floating wick on oil in clamshells for keeping vigil until the hand of God rise from the water and ferry the boat into the maw of the night. The god of the sea is Agwe, and he is the eel from the biomass pond. I have chocolate saints figurines, and so I undertook the work of the prophet and became adept at untwisting his words. I sweated and tossed in bed, hardly slept. Since returning from the Caribbean waters, I could no longer find warmth, even lying naked on sun-warm slabs by the sea. A sailor, speaking the local idiom, said to derive from the English of the early mid-modern period, instructed me to sail from the Gulf of Maine to the Bay of Biscay and celebrate the marriage of cod and wine. On the walls of the cave at El Castillo are images of the same Mi'kmaq double-ended ocean-going canoes that had been used for whaling during my youth in Red Bay, Newfoundland. The titanium cladding of the Bilbao Guggenheim Museum shimmered in the sun. In its bowels, the boy in me admired the oxidized iron sheets of Richard Serra's The Matter of Time. The boy had begun to understand the folded forms that had informed his life. The immense weight of Serra's construction dragged time down to a geological pace of extreme delay. The work of God. The boy found a cranny in the broom closet where he could sleep, looking up at the naked girders that supported the skin of the museum where it floated above him. He saw in the intersection of the beams a sacred space not unlike the interior of God's Sagrada Familia. He closed his eyes to the whispering wind from the HVAC system, hugged himself in his thin shirt, and slept. Can I have some water?
Yes.
Get up! Get out of here! The apoplectic face of the toothless security guard frightened me. The guard dog on his chain. "Rees Rodley," he says, "and rake forth even nimthy way to Nineveh withouten other speech," as if the guard were a ventriloquist sent by the Lord. Uncomprehending, refusing to comprehend, I washed my face in the Nervion. I sat on the embankment. My shirt stank of night terrors. After it had dried in the sun, I went to have coffee with the grandniece of the loneliest gay poet ever to have inhabited the planet Earth. She approved of my project, translating his Jardín Cerrado into English. I felt the birth of true purpose, not nightmare dicta from the Old Testament times. My course now lay through mountains along a narrow-gauged railroad track constructed for removing iron ore from the mines. I followed the torturous path to León, where I was to meet the poet who was the grandfather of my recovery. In dallying, I denied the commands of my lord, resolute as he was in harrying me on. You might not have noticed, but my text will slip in and out of the Middle English of the Pearl Poet. I'm quoting from his poem called Patience, which is the story of Jonah and the whale. The path narrowed. Mountains on each side grew closer, the angle of the ascent steeper. From a cleft in the rock fell a bridal veil of sacred water. A voice chanted a lesson in the old language. God is glad to him, glad that him unglad made. Counting beads as I slipped through wrinkled hands established a lulling sonority. And in that city my say is so all about that in that place at the point I put the heart. A poetics of spontaneous speech was implicated. Without premeditation, say only the words I put in your heart. Was this the art of prophecy that enables poetry? Was drumming required for voyage? I continued down the valleys, past spas and soap factories, in the chapel where apocalyptic beasts materialized themselves in passages from the Book of Revelation. 1063, San Isidro. My host commanded that we eat before we speak. The proposed journey unsettled him. Old Marxist that he is, he discounted the magical appeal of Visigothic legend. He knew that there had once been a religion that hewed more closely to the cycles of the seasons. I remembered the lesson of The Matter of Time, Serra's sculpture. The gears grind ever more slowly. The landscape around us lay in waste. To redeem Nineveh required the prophet to sow a field with dragon teeth. I fear that to condemn the evil ways of the sinful citizens, even though I cited the livid anger of a wrathful God, would bring about my death at the hands of unhappy mobs. No indemnification for goodwill in that place. The mission promised destruction, nothing good. I argued with myself, nothing good could come from the words so disseminated. Like Thebes, Nineveh would rise and fall in a day. So I assumed. I defied my lord. My way lay along mountains to the mountaintops to the Pyrenees, allowing sufficient time. Nineveh would fall in the Syrian wars before I arrived. After all, it's only a suburb of Mosul. Why bother? My rebellion caused cold sweats. Nineveh has endured since the beginning of time, its streets crowded with lost souls. The four-story tower of San Clement rose above the treetops. I traced the path that the Cathars from Carcassonne took down to Gosol in the valley where Picasso had discovered cubism among the gray tones of the cliff walls. Art redeems nature, I thought. I measured the fall of sunlight through a single aperture in a white room. My skin was burnt. A Polish youth stopped to observe the operation. His tale of the number of mountains he had traversed since sunrise awakened my affections. He was not Gabriel, and I was no longer young. My breathing was raspy. As I reached the climax, bending myself, the doors of perception opened. The face of God dissolved among the scudding clouds over Pedra Forca. A forester from Andorra offered me a ride. He had a fast van. With his help, I reached Vic, and from there it was a short rail voyage to Barcelona. On the train, I noticed an Arabian girl with multicolored sneakers. She had beaten her brother and left a bruise on his forehead. She had one eye. She was an alter ego of mine, born in the throes of a resurgent time. In the port, I booked a berth on a fishing vessel bound for the Isles of the Blessed. They sought whitefish, merluzze and labina. They would land their catch on the very shores where I first had observed the titanium whale in scales gleaming in the morning sun like iridescent leaves. Atlantic cyclones marched from the east to the west. We made no headway. As we approached Tenerife, the captain sought the safety of Ultima Thule off the Newfoundland coast, returning me to my childhood. God wants me dead, was all my thought. Not wanting to suffer sores, his soul is at hazard. Desperate to save their ship and its cargo, I was identified as the bearer of a curse, much as Cain and Grendel had carried in my other lives. Now is Jonah the Jew judged to drown. Of that Shendel ship, men shoved him sown. Not scraped by a tooth, Leviathan swallowed me whole. Not mine the fate of Ahab or Ahab's leg, though this monster was a cousin to the white whale. These are the far-flung gyres through which time like sludge smears all in its path. In the bowels of the beast, I found a cranny above the sloshing of putrid mire. A tidal surge in the Tigris vomited me forth and spewed my body onto the shores of Nineveh. Broken man, God chided me for my vain and selfish flight. Imagine the progress upriver. In 2007, two humpbacked whales passed under the Golden Gate Bridge and navigated 120 miles upstream on the Sacramento. Legend proclaimed that the citizens were terrified by Jonah's prophecies. They feared the wrath of a god who was not theirs, a war god from a different cosmos. The king removed his robe and dived into the ash pit. Yet on the morning after victory, I complained because the Lord had incinerated the shelter that had protected me under the leaves of the gourd vine, the bower that had meant salvation. The sun that glimmered on the leaves became an unbearable desert fire, scorching aching limbs and ragged torso. "Be not so Grendel, good man," remonstrated the Lord. Grendel, Grendel, another word pair, a lesson in patience motivated the work of the pearl poet who constructed his word machine with intricate weavings of rhythms and figures for container and things contained, in which rattle the wheels of time, a titanium-clad whale, a nook in the belly of the living Leviathan, transformations of the one and the count as one, as described by Lane Badieu. Could a prophet had prevented the destruction of Mosul? It was in the great mosque that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared the beginning of ISIL's caliphate, which spanned Iraq and Syria. Mosul's original population of 2.5 million perished during 3 years of occupation by ISIL. Many additional lives were destroyed during the liberation, which displaced another 1 million people. Refugees on every shore were victims of bombing by missiles and mortars. Their children, their grandparents, even the newlywed perished, their homes obliterated in a fog of radioactive dust. For the editors of Al Jazeera, the liberation of Mosul was deja vu all over again. Could a poet with a special dispensation from God make sense of what he saw looking down from the Sinjar Mountains? He saw no God in Nineveh's province. The poet understood Jonah's impatience with his warrior God in relationship to the occupation, destruction, and liberation of Mosul. The poet buried himself under the weight of his poetry. The city had once been extremely diverse, with ethnic minorities including Armenians, Yazdis, Assyrian, Turkmen, and Shabak people. What was the stake that would allow an isolated individual poet to proclaim a moral vision when he himself had none? Thank you. Thank you.